A gift.
Yes, like an offering to the great god of football.
What if he had missed?
You have to trust your teammates, always. If not, we are lost. Bonjour, welcome to episode 57 of the Movie Mixtape. My name is Dirk, and when the seagulls follow the trawler, it is because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. And joining me are two lovely sardines, my very good friends, Marty Dale and Mikey P. How are you both?
Just got back from the print shop. I have my full-blown 20 by 24 poster of Dirk that I'm going to talk to as I go to sleep tonight. I can't wait when I need advice.
Am I popping my collar?
The strut. You're strutting your attitude strut.
I only hope that I can materialize in your bedroom and offer you some important life advice. Marcy, would you like me to materialize into your bedroom?
One, I am not a sardine, okay? I am a beautiful, beautiful blue whale in this ocean of life.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just letting you know.
So that's a no on the bedroom.
No, because you called me a sardine.
I was merely quoting Eric Cantona, Marcy. As you well know.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to yell at me, but thank God they fucking showed that clip.
Now that Marcy's sworn, we'll just stick the E-tag on straight away.
This movie's about English football. It's going to happen.
But yes, come in, sit down. You'll be more comfortable. This is the Movie Mixtape. I have already said that. And we are three very good friends. My name is Dirk. Her name is Marcy. And his name is Mikey P. And you are joining us at the start of a new mixtape. What is a mixtape? Well, let me explain it to you. Right, what we're doing here on this podcast is we're trying to recreate that whole feeling, that whole vibe of when you were 12 years old and used to tape songs off the radio and share them with your mates and people that you liked and called it a mixtape. That's what we're doing. But we're doing it with movies. Each four episodes, we have a theme. And this current theme is sports. Or if you come from where I'm from, just sport. And I went first, so this episode is my pick, and I have gone for the Ken Loach film from 2009, Looking for Eric, which we'll be talking about later on. How are we all doing?
Bon.
Comme ci, comme ça. That's about one of the only bit of French that I actually remember, which means so-so, which is probably the most British French phrase you could possibly learn. Yeah, I'm all right. What about it? Weather's rubbish in it and conservative government, but what can we do about it?
we decorated for Christmas. My baby is almost a year old. I'm very sad.
I was thinking that. Yeah.
That's crazy. But we decorated the house. We put the tree up. She's been surprised. She's been excited, yelling a lot. It's been very fun. So.
But you've both put your trees up, which is insane because we are recording this episode in September. that is how eager the two of you are. Mm-hmm. Is it feeling nice having the tree up?
Yeah, it's like a nice ambience. So actually, wait. We finally put the TV on the wall and Mikey, I don't know, what is this thing called? The light that I have behind my TV? What is it called? I don't know.
Ambiance light or
I don't LED? Know. But yeah. We have that. So we have a light behind our TV and you can change colors or it can go with like the sound or whatever. But we just have that on and then light the tree on and it is freaking awesome. And we had red on for Manchester United watching this last night. So that was pretty cool. Yeah.
That is pretty cool. Did you watch it with Dan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I watched it by myself Thanksgiving. And then last night I was like, I need to rewatch this. And he's like, okay. So we watched it last night. Yeah.
Good on you, Dan. Good on you. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas, Governor.
Backlight, by the way. That's what it's called, apparently.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's incredible how you just kind of pluck that from the back of the occipital lobe right there.
Wait, Mikey, do you have that too? Or...
Yeah.
An occipital lobe, I think he should, yeah.
Wow, where'd you get yours? Wait, does Dirk have one too? The backlight?
No, I have lots of wires dangling down from my TV.
Yeah.
And I have a really awkward system in my house. I have a nice sound bar, which I'm very proud of.
Okay.
But the big TV, the main TV, it's in the big living space, which is it's like an open plan kitchen. But we've got all these kind of like Velux windows. Do you know what they are? They're like glass doors looking out into the garden.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So in the summer, you can't watch a film until it's like 10 o'clock at night. So I am reveling in these winter nights that start at like 4 o'clock because I can actually finally switch that TV on and get some good use out of it. Mm-hmm. Get my money's worth out of that TV.
Yeah, but not for you, for the kids. You can't watch anything at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Let's be real. Come on.
This is what Betsy watches, right? She goes on the YouTube and she watches something called Slime Stories where they divide the screen in half. On one side, there's just somebody sticking their fingers in slime. And on the other side is a full-on facial shot of some girl in her like early 20s who's telling this ridiculous story and she's going like,
I've seen that.
It was one the other day. It was like, mother, shall we go to the shops? I'm not your real mother. I killed your mother before you were born. It's like, what is going on here? What are you watching? And she's going, I'm just watching the person stick their finger in slime. You know, talking about Christmas, that's what she wants for Christmas, really, just slime. And she's going on all these boutique slime shops in America. And she's going, oh, I'll get this. I'll get that. I'll get this. And I had to sit her down. I had to sit her down and to explain some hard truths because she's 9 now, all right? So I had to really break it to her. I had to say, look, Father Christmas, he's got a budget, okay? He's got a budget. And also, he's not magic enough that he can make slime that is sold out on a website, okay? Because we all know he can't do that, right? We all know that Father Christmas has negotiated business arrangements with different websites and he can connect to, let's say, Peachy Baby Slime Shop, which is online and in America, and he can talk to them in exchange of goods and get some of their slime in his bag, in his sack. We know that happens. We're not stupid. But what he can't do, if a slime is sold out on their shop, he can't magic that into his bag. And we've had to explain that in great detail. And I'm still not sure she fully comprehends it. She's like, he'll just make it himself. Father Christmas is many things, Betsy. But he is not a slime entrepreneur. You know, so he's relying on Peachy Baby's skill. He can't do it. So we'll see what happens come Christmas Day. See what Father Christmas chucks down our chimney. Are you guys all sorted for your Christmases? It's only 10 days away.
I mean, I told you before we started the show, but we're wrapping Kaya's present starting tonight because I want to see where we're at. But I'm going to keep going because I'm not going to stop.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Hold on a second, Massey. So you've got presents for Kaya as well as Father Christmas getting presents for Kaya. Is that how you do it in your house?
Yes. No, Father Christmas is going to be just giving her one big present, I think.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then everything else is from mom and dad.
Nice. Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah.
It's good to have that kind of conversation with Father Christmas ahead of time so he knows really what to bring. I don't know about you, Mikey, but I tend to send Father Christmas texts in the presence of my children so that they know I've communicated what we've just discussed effectively.
Interesting.
I am going to need some Father Christmas tips because growing up, Father Christmas was not a thing for me. So we're going to have to figure this out how I can handle this, please.
Marcy,
yes.
You just had to behave. You were obviously on the naughty list.
No.
Obviously on the naughty list.
I was told some things at a very young age, so, yeah.
That sent you off the rails.
I was like, oh, okay. And then that was it.
You were like, in Macy's, pickpocketing.
I am in new territory. Combs. I have no idea what to do for this because I did not have this. And yes, Danny goes, I don't remember. And I'm like, great. So what are we going to do for this? It's also Kaya's birthday. So it's like, what do we do for that too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, at least you know you're going to have cake on Christmas Day.
Lots of cake. Yeah, we're doing Moana themed for the one part. We're having two parties on Christmas for her.
Nice. You all set, Mikey?
Yeah, Father Christmas is way over budget. That's the text I just got from him.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
we're going to talk about investing in companies. I wish I could invest in that Lego group because I think I probably – Father Christmas went crazy at the Lego store and way over budget, but – that's his passion. That's Logan. That's Mia. But Logan's passion is Lego, so it costs a little more than slime.
You just gotta follow his. You just gotta follow your passion.
He already told me he's moving to Denmark. That's where their headquarters are. And he asked me, "Am I gonna follow him one day? Am I gonna?" I was like, "Yeah." What kind of language do they speak over there? What's the currency?
Oh wow!
Random questions all the time. He's going there.
Well, I can answer that. They speak Swedish in Denmark. it's very cold most of the time.
Yeah. I told him
that's incredible.
Yeah, we talked about the healthcare system, how much better it is over there than America. So he's all psyched.
Well, to be fair, Mikey, you could put a pin in any country in the map, and that could be true, couldn't it?
Yep.
But I mean, it's that serious. He wants to move to Denmark.
He wants to. They have a. So we watched the Lego Master Show. I think I mentioned, and they have a show coming up called "It's for the Kids." It's where you're going to be. The contestants are kids, and we went through the application process, put his name in, they ask a lot of interesting questions about how does your child deal with, like, rejection and not winning? Like, they really want to prepare you for what you're about to endure. And, you know, we're going through the questions, and he had maturity to be like, I don't think I'm ready for this. I don't think I can do this. And so he backed out. But I thought that was mature, but he really wants to, you know, he asked, like, what kind of college will help him get a job at Lego and stuff like that.
Holy moly.
And that's like something he's been saying since he was 5 or 6. And, you know, I thought you would think eventually it kind of wears off, but he's 10 years old now and he's still, you know, every single thing he wants for birthday and Christmas is still Lego. So
I think that Lego are the type of company that don't really care what you got on your CV.
Nope.
They want to see you come in and play with some fucking Lego.
Yeah,
don't they? And they just want to see your passion for it. I feel like they're a company that employs people who are passionate. I've just made that up, but it feels like it. They're Scandinavian, you know. What more do you want?
Yeah, yeah.
I actually asked for Legos for Christmas this year to myself.
Which one?
Harry Potter ones.
Yeah, there we go. You want that Gringotts? I know it.
I want the Ravenclaw banner one. I just want to start small, okay? Because listen, I don't need to go down this rabbit hole of addiction, okay? I have a small child now, okay?
Harry Potter and the slightly wet sock. Was that the... Was
Dobby!
That,
that could apply, honestly. That could.
Well, should we talk about this bloody movie then?
Yes.
This film? Oh. Marty getting on with some shoulder action there. Ooh. Mikey following it with a bit of head bobble.
Everybody's ready to talk about the movie. Yep.
So, just tickled yourself with the line, everybody's ready to talk about the movie. That's the bar for this episode. So we're going to do 2009's Looking for Eric, starring Steve Evans and Eric Cantona, directed by Ken Loach, screenplay by Paul Laverty. Shall we crack on? Shall I do the synopsis?
I think it's time. I think it's time. Yeah, because
it's better be good. A lot of people probably don't know, ever heard of this movie.
Like, well, don't worry. I've kept up with the tradition
if it's of
not describing the movie at all in the synopsis.
Okay.
Here we go. This is synopsis 2. I'm looking for Eric. Welcome to Final Score, your place for all the reports and results from today's games. I'm Trevor. Let's head straight over to Manchester, where our reporter, Ed Flattop, is standing by at the break. Ed?
Trevor? We had all the makings of a mixtape classic here at Old Trafford. Found family, beautiful French people, and dads. Am I right? But within minutes, we saw local postman Eric Bishop, sick as a parrot, driving the wrong way round a roundabout. Inconceivable. What was he thinking? Eric's haphazard form continued through most of the first half. His head had dropped and he'd lost all confidence in the box. Now, it may have been a psychotic delusion, or a toke on a bifter, or just an inspired substitution, but who should arrive on the pitch? Manchester United footballing legend, one Eric Cantona. King Cantona. You literally couldn't write it. Little Eric began to link up with Big Eric, a couple of 1-2s, and it looked like he was back on track. But there are no easy games at this level. He would have to give 110%, weave past local criminals, learn to trust his teammates, and face up to his biggest personal own goal, if he has any chance of realising that life is often a game of two halves. He'll need all of that Mancunian French flair to play to the whistle and get a result. So back to you in the studio, Trevor. So that is Looking for Eric. And Marcy, you did guess correctly. There was a dad's am I right in there. Almost went full dad's am I right, but you know, you've just got to...
I've already just derailed this enough. You don't need me derailing this anymore.
I'm looking forward to Mikey's first ever dad's am I right synopsis. But Mikey, you did say something just before I did that synopsis. You were like, you better get this synopsis right because nobody's bloody seen this movie before. And I think, yeah, you're right. That's how you podcast, isn't it? That's how you get viewers, that's listeners, that's how you get downloads. You pick a movie that's got like about 300 reviews on Letterboxd. This is how you get new listeners, podcasting 101. What I wanted to do with this film, when me and Marcy first started talking about this podcast, a real big aim of it was to share personal films or films that the other person really hadn't seen before that perhaps explained a little bit about who they were so we could find out a little bit more about them. And so this was, I think we had this on the list from the beginning, didn't we? I had it on the list from the beginning, like you said last week. So, and it was just such a obvious choice for me that we would do this on here at some point. So I'm very excited to talk about it with you both now. Do you know Ken Loach or do you know Eric Cantona? Do either of you have any experience with those two gentlemen?
I've only ever seen one Ken Loach movie, and I told you about it earlier this week, but it's called The Wind That Shakes the Barley, and it's a 2007 movie with Cillian Murphy. And it has nothing to do with what is happening in this movie. So, maybe like the drama aspects kind of felt similar, but that's about it, I would say. That's a movie about the Irish fighting the British. You know, yeah.
Which won the Palme d'Or.
It did, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Look at you.
Look at me. like a nerd.
I'm proud of you.
Knowing about this movie. Yeah, what do you say, Mikey?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question, actually, because I was going to be brave and show my ignorance because I've never heard of Eric Cantona. Oh,
me either, Mikey.
Okay.
Me either.
And I was so messed up. A lot of my sports heroes growing up turned out to be drug users and washed up. And because the man's name was Eric in the movie, I actually thought, and there were some similarities in facial features, that the movie starts out with an older Eric. And I thought that was actually going to be Eric Cantona and that like this was, we're going to find out what happened to his life. And I felt so dumb. And like when he's looking at the poster, I'm like, oh, he's looking at his former self and be like, what? I had a fall from grace and I can't wait to find out what happened.
Where did all my muscles go? Where did my brow go? No.
And then the real Eric shows up, you know, dashing fellow. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay.
Such a beautiful
Now man. I get it. Yeah, now I get it. So what, Derek, you did say at the end of the last, when you picked this movie and obviously we were clueless to it, but you, or I was, and you said this is a personal pick for you. And I know you know who Eric is, and Manchester United is your team, I believe. You watched this like right away, like when this movie came out, like in the theater?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. You were waiting for this one?
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. So a big, big fan of Eric. I feel like I'm insulting you too by saying that. Like I didn't even know about this athlete.
No, that's not an insult. I mean, as Marcy well knows, I very rarely get, you know, if Marcy says to me, when was the first time you watched this film? I'm like, are you kidding? Can't remember what I had for my breakfast. I saw this in the theater. At the time, this is a big deal for me when it came out.
Oh, wow.
A really big deal. So yeah, I'm a Manchester United fan. I am from Manchester originally. And I think that, so this is a film about a down on his luck postman who is probably what,
Late 40s, early 50s?
I think early 50s.
Early 50s.
Yeah. Let's be honest.
He looks older, but I think he's supposed to be like early 50s, and that's part of it, right? He's a fanatical Manchester United fan, but who's in a place in his life where he doesn't want to be. He's not happy for many multiple reasons. And just when he's at his lowest ebb, along comes Eric Cantona, the absolute hero of his life, to provide him with advice and to help him through. So this is a film about a sports person, a hero, and the relationship between a hero and their fans. But I really think that there is something that only works with Eric Cantona. There is something that makes this film go from this is a great 3.5 out of 5 movie to this is genius. This is gold. And it is Eric Cantona, and it is the fairy tale of Eric Cantona. So just to give you a bit of background about him, they say it in the film, he's this flawed genius. And he, when he came to England from France, he'd already been basically ostracized from France in football terms. He'd assaulted a couple of his teammates. He'd called the French manager a bag of shit at one point, and so was banned from playing for the national team.
Oh, wow.
And he was felt to be just too much trouble, more trouble than he was worth. But a couple of higher-ups in French football were fans of his, and they kind of encouraged some managers over in England to give him a try. But in his first year, he went through 2 different clubs for a variety of reasons, never settled, and then he winds up at Manchester United. Manchester United, essentially probably the biggest club in England, you could argue that, but essentially the biggest club in England, but hadn't won the league title for 25 years, which was just like this huge burden on their shoulders. Eric Cantona comes in and transforms the team, just immediately settles, and this is his place where he finds his home. He retired at 30, so he played for Manchester United for like 5 years. 4 of those years, we won the title. Considering that we'd never won it for 25 years, 4 of those years, we won the title. 1 year that we didn't, he was banned for 9 months, which they sort of allude to in the film. Mm-hmm. Do you know why he was banned for 9 months?
Did he call his manager another bag of shit?
No. He got sent off in a game for just kicking out a player. And as he was walking off, he turned around, ran towards the crowd, and did a flying kick into a fan's chest.
Oh my God.
And then smacked him in the face and then punched him in the face.
Hold on. I want to look up this video right now. Hold on.
I'm going to send you the video right now.
That's amazing. Okay,
I want you to see this video.
Put it in the show notes too. That's incredible.
I'm going to show you the video and then we can come back. We can come back to it. The video I'm going to share with you is entitled Eric Cantona Kung Fu Kick.
Jeez. I mean, I don't know. That makes me think of that Ron Artest in the NBA. Yeah. Remember right. that, Mikey?
Yeah.
What the fuck? Oh, my God.
He played with the pop collar like that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so it's the thing, right? He plays with the pop collar. He plays with the swagger. He's just this whole entity that transcends football.
Really? Hold on, sorry. Just touch it. Sorry, that was great. Okay,
so he is like the best player in the league. Jesus. At this point. Hmm. And he's always had a temper, as we've seen, as I've said to you about like him attacking his teammates and calling his manager a bag of shit. So he's always had a bit of a temper.
He's a competitor.
But so the story is that as he was walking off the pitch, that fan was giving him a lot of racist abuse.
Oh.
Is Roy Kent supposed to be him?
I was going to ask the same thing, yeah.
So I think Roy Kent is an amalgamation of many different people.
Okay.
Of which probably, I think Roy Keane is also a bit of Roy Kent, who also played for Manchester United too. But yeah, Roy Kent, he's got the look of Cantona, hasn't he, as well?
Yes.
He looks a bit like him, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
So Cantona actually got sentenced to 2 weeks in prison because of that.
That's assault, huh? That. Wow.
Yeah, what? Yeah, he got done for assault, but on an appeal, didn't have to go to jail, prison, and did like 300 hours community service or something like that. So which he did, he gave football lessons to underprivileged kids, I think is what he did. But so there's this whole bit he was banned for 9 months. He can't say the name Eric Cantona over here without somebody going kung fu kick. I mean, it's everybody knows it. And so it was in all the papers. It wasn't just like back page news. It's front page news. It's the headline story of everything for such a long time. And then he's out for 9 months.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, well, what's he going to be like when he comes back? You know, he's more, we told you he was more trouble than he was worth. And then when he comes back, that first season he comes back, he's better than he ever was.
Wow, get out of here.
And we win the title again. He only sticks around for one more season, which United still win the title in, but then he decides he's going to retire. And I think in his own words, he says he just didn't feel he was going to get any better.
Wow.
And he wanted to go out on top. So, and he stopped playing football at 30 and he started acting. He sings now. And so he really believes he's an artist. That whole mythology that surrounds him, it makes this scenario here where we get this bit of magical realism in this movie, it seem appropriate. Like if it was just, say, Messi, who's like one of the greatest footballers of all time, it probably would be fun, but wouldn't quite work to the level whereby this real sense of destiny with Eric Cantona and Manchester United, like he was born to play for Manchester United. There was no other club that he settled at. And even after he was out for 9 months, he wanted to come back to Manchester United. Like the easiest thing he could have done was to move abroad into Milan, I think, were interested in him. So move to Italy and he wouldn't have got the stick from all the opposing fans when he came back. Everybody was clearly going to be out for him trying to wind him up. But no, he wanted to stay at United. And I think that meant so much to just the fans that he was one of them. And like, what is destiny if it's not a little bit of supernatural or magical realism? And I think that's why it really works here with Eric. But also we see Eric Bishop, you know, he's made many small mistakes in his life, but he makes this ginormous, huge mistake. And that's what Cantona did as well, isn't it? Like I've just said, all these little mistakes he made that led him to United. And then when he was there riding away, being the best player in the league, he makes this huge mistake that takes him out of the game for 9 months, but he learns from it. And he comes back stronger and a better person. So it's not just about getting advice from a hero. It's about getting advice from a hero who's literally been in the same position that you are in now. It just works so, so well. And it was actually Cantona who approached Ken Loach and said, how would you feel about doing a film together? How would you feel about doing a film about my relationship with Manchester United fans? Because he loves Ken Loach. You know, he just is such a huge fan of Ken Loach as a director, because his type of films is all about the working person, the, you know, real everyday struggles. And I think they share similar sensibilities. He's a socialist, basically. He's a left-wing socialist. And that is very definitely what Ken Loach is. So that's where they meet together. And that's how this film happened. That's the context, I suppose.
That was wonderful.
Of how we get here, you know.
Well, I just want to say thank you for sharing that. Because obviously I had a disconnect a little bit to the movie just because I don't know all of that. And I didn't know who he was before this. But I think you going over all of that really captures the spirit of this movie. This is like the connections we make to, you know, it doesn't just have to be sports, but for this movie, specifically sports and players. And it's just like you just shared, like you had your own little Eric, the main character Eric, moment by sharing like what your passion is and what your connection is to your team and to your player. And so thank you, because that's what this movie's all about. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, and I feel really ignorant that I didn't know him, actually. And I know this is probably when they were talking about some of the, you know, his career highlights. He's talking with Eric, and they kind of, I love that they showed the actual footage of the plays.
Yeah, so
you know,
good,
for
right?
People that don't know, and they mentioned Beckham, and obviously everybody knows him. But maybe it was just because it was a generation. I guess there are generations kind of crossed, but he's an older player. Like he was.
Yeah. His team was the one just before Beckham's main team. United had a really good run. So they had this team with Cantona, which probably lasted 4 or 5 seasons. And then Beckham's team was sort of, which was developing in the background. And that's what they always say is like, because of Cantona, that's how these young players were able to develop. Because he was so inspirational.
Yeah.
And like everybody, nobody who plays with him in United ever really had a bad word to say about him at all. They said maybe he was a bit fiery at times, but mostly he was softly spoken, just really dedicated, wanting to help people.
I just wanted to say, like, we all know who David Beckham is because he's like Michael Jordan. But I think what the difference between him and Eric Cantona is that there's more of a humility with Eric, where David just feels like a celebrity on another level. And I think that's why the whole world knows who David Beckham is, and maybe not Eric Cantona, where he probably like was okay. Like, I don't have to be on that pedestal. I don't have to marry a Spice Girl. I don't have to do this, this, and this. You know what I mean? So I think that's like where the difference comes in, where you, I mean, you obviously know who Michael Jordan is. And I mean, but like, that's the level of celebrity that some athletes get to. And Eric Cantona obviously had that over in your country, but not enough to like get over here exactly like somebody like a David Beckham. But I think that's a good thing, if you know what I mean. Like, I think it's hard for athletes to have maintain humility throughout their career, especially as they're winning, and to go out on top like he did. Not many people get to do that and make that choice and be happy with it. I think a lot of people can just... the ego can go to their heads. And I think, like, I did not get that at all from him in this movie. And I think that might be the otherworldly part of him, is that he's just a guy. Like, he says, well, I mean, he does say, I'm not a man. I'm Cantona. But, you know, no, there's just something different. Even, like, I don't watch football, but I love hockey. And you get a lot of that from hockey players over here. They're very more down to earth than other athletes, I'd say, in this country. So that's just my two cents.
I think that's a really good observation, but especially linking it to the movie, he was so ready to send himself up, because what he's famous for, apart from the kung fu kick, is some of these ridiculous quotes that he would come out with. So that one at the end, the press conference that they show right at the end with the end credits, is the other thing he's really famous for. So that was after it had been announced he was going to be banned for 9 months, and he had to give a press conference. And that is what he said: when the seagulls follow the trawler, it is because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. Thank you. Goodbye. And that's it. That was all he did in the press conference, and got up and walked out. Okay. And you could argue, what a prat. But being that is still, like, that is so in the cultural mindset over here. Well, absolutely.
I'm so glad they showed it, because at one point Eric was like, I'm still thinking about the seagull quote. And I was like, what is he talking about? And then it showed up at the end, and I was like, thank God, because I was so confused.
Yeah. Because everybody over here watching that will know what that means, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think he was so ready to send himself up in this film because of all the proverbs, doesn't he? It's like he's giving life advice to Eric. So back to the movie. So Eric lives in a house in Manchester with his two stepsons. His wife, well, the mother of the two sons, has left him 7 years ago. And we see him at a point of crisis. He gets admitted to hospital because he's crashed his car after driving it the wrong way round and round about many, many times. And we see he's depressed. And you see that he's got no respect at home. His kids certainly run roughshod in the house. He's got a good set of friends, clearly, but he's struggling. He's really struggling. So what we get is Eric Cantona, who is his hero, eventually popping up and giving him all these little proverbs and stuff to try and get him going. So I think he really had no ego about it. He wanted to do it. He was happy. He was made up to be able to present this version, because this, in a way, is the version of Eric Cantona that lives in Eric Bishop's head, isn't it? So this is a caricature of Eric Cantona, because it's the vision this man has of his hero, and that is what we're presented with through the film. What did you think of it then? Go on. What did you think of it?
Yeah, it's interesting that now, thinking about the movie, I want to rewatch it, knowing this megastar that he was and some of the things he said, but even not knowing, it was kind of cool to have that perspective, not even knowing who this person was, and just to understand, like, this is somebody he looked up to and giving him advice. And some of the things he said were, he had some crazy proverbs, but he said some things that were pretty profound. My favorite line was he talks to him. He says, "You're Eric Cantona. Like, you have all these women. You drink what champagne? You're the man. Like, if you wouldn't understand me." And he says to him something like, "Do you think my friends are better than your friends?" Which I thought was such a great line. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, you could have all that, but your friends are still going to be the same as if you don't have all that. And ultimately, like, the friends are the ones that kind of really are. I loved how they were really there for him, and I think he kind of leaned on them. And they have like, you see this meeting where they have like, I don't know what this is, like self-reflection of like, let picture, close your eyes and have this visualization of the type of person you want to be.
I love that scene, Mikey, with all the friends around in the house, in his front room. So Eric Bishop has had his car crash and his friends are worried about him.
Yeah.
And then one friend, Meatballs, is trying to get in. trying to improve his mood and trying various strategies he's read about in different books. And they all sit around his living room, visualizing somebody who loves them and somebody they love or something like that. Marcy's shaking her head.
I'm just saying, Del Castro thing just made me laugh so freaking hard. Like, what the heck? But that, I think that's just Spleen's character. So
That's right.
So yeah, they all had to pick a person that they admire and wish they could be like. And it's like Sammy Davis Jr., Fidel Castro. I'm sure that plays differently in America than it does over here.
Definitely it does. Yeah.
Definitely in Miami.
100%.
The friends, the actors who played the friends were all stand-up comedians. Mm. So they're all like local stand-up comedians. Some of them had been in like a few TV shows, like sitcoms and stuff like that. But you could sort of get that vibe, can't you? It's like all, they were just kind of ribbing each other.
Riffing off of each other? Is that what you mean?
Riffing off each other. Okay. Yeah. Riffing off each other. Yeah?
Okay.
Did you feel like that?
Yeah, I actually was going to ask that because it felt very improv, that scene. Like, because they were throwing out names that I was like, what? Mm-hmm. And then the one guy's like, Nelson Mandela. And the other guy's like, well, Gandhi. Who's better than Nelson Mandela? Gandhi, I'll one-up you. So, no, that scene was really funny to me, just because, like, when Fidel Castro got mentioned, I was like, what the fuck is happening?
I think there's definitely a looseness to the script, but there's a definite script. So Eric had the idea. Him and his brother have a production company, and they went to Ken Loach and said, can we do this movie? They worked it with the script writer, the screenwriter. There is a script. There's 100% a script. Do you know anything about Ken Loach and the way he sometimes likes to do his movies?
No, I don't.
So they film it in chronological order.
Okay.
And all the script they get is the script for the day. So they don't have any future. They don't know what's going to happen in the film.
That's cool. That's cool.
And there's a looseness that they can improvise. So things in this movie that the actors did not know were going to happen.
Mm.
There's a police raid later on. They did not know the police were going to barge in to the meal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When later on there's a bit where they're driving around trying to find the stepson, they did not know what was the outcome of that. They didn't know if they were going to find him and he was going to be dead or what have you. And get this, Mikey. They did not know
that Eric was going to be there.
Eric Cantona was in the movie.
Oh, wow.
And so what happened was they were filming the scene, and it was the scene where Eric Bishop is talking to his poster on the wall of Eric Cantona, and he's smoking on a bifter that he's got from his stepson's, underneath his stepson's floorboards. And he's asking him, you know, has he ever made a mistake that he really regrets or something like that? And then you just hear this voice from behind him. That was the first moment.
So that's a real reaction then.
Wow.
So that's it. Well, that is a real second reaction because they couldn't use the first reaction.
Okay. Okay.
So he did, but genuine, like, had no idea that was.
Could you imagine
Eric Cantona was going to be
being in that situation?
Yeah, that's wild. Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
It's insane, isn't it? Apparently, Ken Loach is like, well, surprise is one of the hardest things to fake.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I just want to keep everybody on their
toes. I really thought, though, when he says fucking hell, I thought that was very genuine. And I was wondering if maybe that was. I didn't think, like, I thought he knew he was going to be in the movie. I didn't know that he didn't know that, but I thought that was like his first time seeing him, which it kind of was, but the fucking hell felt very like authentic, and so that makes a lot of sense now. Yeah.
Well, it was like 10 minutes after he'd met him. That was
so
like,
though, that's
take
not that
two.
Like yeah.
No, exactly. He was saying, as I was listening to the commentary, and he was saying he was still riding that wave of shock in that second take.
Oh man. Well, can I say, so I had a hard time connecting with this movie. I watched it twice, and I just had a hard time because, you know, I don't know anything about this football player. I'm not a British father. But where I could connect to it was what we were talking about earlier when you were giving your synopsis was that, like, you know, life is hard sometimes, and we find these pleasures or these joys, like sports or movies. They can change your day, they can change your month, they can change, like, how you're feeling. And maybe sports isn't mine, but movies definitely are. And I just love that, like, that's, I really felt like that was the message of this, that, like, you can create these connections and these feelings. And, like, he could remember specific plays. And I love when he was talking to Eric Cantona, and he's like, remember when you did this and this? And he's like, no. And he's like, I do. And it's like, yeah, maybe not sports, but I can remember where I was for specific movies, or I can remember how certain scenes made me feel. But yeah, I have some issues to myself, and there's some days that are just absolutely so hard. But, you know, like, if you put on, like, your warm blanket movie, or if you, like, watch an episode of something you really like, it makes all the difference in the world. And that's, like, sports is such an escape for people, and it's such a big thing in my city too. Like, American football is huge where I'm from, and I mean, Sundays are, like, religious. I mean, for the football, not for the church aspect, but, and, like, just everybody forgetting everything and just that camaraderie you get with it, as long as you're on the same side as the home team, and just, like, you know, worshiping these players. And when you do meet them on the outside, what a big deal it is. And, like, it feels so, I don't know the word for it. I want to say local, but, like, when you meet your local sports team hero, like, and it's like, yeah, maybe outside in the rest of the world, you're not a big deal, but here you mean everything, and you are, like, basically royalty here. And I got a lot of that too from just this movie. And so,
which is a real truth. Yeah. No, sorry, Marcy, just to confirm that, because, like, you could go to a United game now, and there is a chance people will start singing Eric Cantona's name, because it's a real truth that he lives in every United fan's memory. Absolutely. Yeah. So, were you going to say something else?
No, that's just, like, so, I mean, I was able to connect to it in my own way, but I did have some difficulties with it just because I don't know all of this. But sure, I wanted, you did ask, like, can I provide context? And I was like, I think I'll just go in blind. And I think I made the right decision. And, like, what Mikey said, like, after hearing everything you had to say about it, I will watch this movie in a completely different way the next time I see it.
Well, I think, like, even though even now, even rewatching it, knowing who he is, but I think some of the advice he gives, because he's really looking at him as, like, an older person, like, looking for strength. And the advice he gives is kind of practical, because he has to see this woman that he had a child with years ago, and he has to see her again. He's like, I can't. And he almost, like, loses it. Like, he tries to go, and he's like, I can't do it. And Eric just kind of says, like, what am I going to do? He's like, shave your face, put on a clean shirt, and go talk to her. And that's what he probably would have gone the rest of his life, never interacting with this woman again. But at that pivot point, he said, I'm just going to try. It's basically, Eric says, something doesn't work, you try again. And it's just like, he and the first couple interactions don't go so well. I'm a man that kind of, I'm myself, like, emotions get the best of me. And I kind of felt really for young Eric, because it was seemed like emotions got the best of him. And he's just kind of wandering through life, and meeting this Eric Cantona, like, figure got his life in a different direction by just doing practical things. Have an interaction with him. Keep talking to her. The stuff with his son is a nightmare. It's like, as a parent, this is one of the things you never want to happen, where you lose control of your kid and they get mixed up with the wrong crowd. And that stuff was really serious. That was, like, a serious thing where it's like, I don't know how this kid's going to make it out. He's going to die. And he gets he's mixed up with, like, the mob or a guy who's a gang leader, and he's holding a gun for him. And, like, I just, as a father, I guess, or as a parent, just having your kid just not being able to talk to them, like, what are you doing? And you don't want to, you know, lose them and, like, tighten the grip so much that you're going to lose them. And those were, like, real things. And Eric's, like, you know, gives him practical things, like, let's figure it out. Where, you know, and at the end of the movie, the climax, he's like, you have teammates, you have your friends, like, do something that nobody thought of. And we'll get to the ending. But I think, like, his advice, even being a famous person now, or like a figure of a sports hero, he was just somebody that you would, all those credentials make it somebody that their words are powerful, but anybody just saying to him, talk to your old girl, work it out with your son. Like, just go, just try something. It's better than not doing anything.
What I really liked about it, I don't know if you both got this from the movie, but, like, when I am having an issue, I know exactly what I need to do, and I will tell myself exactly what I need to do, or I need to tell myself, like, hey, that's not this. This is just in your head. But I will never believe if it comes from myself, so it has to come from somebody else telling me that. So him having the mental vision of Eric Cantona, he knows what he needs to hear, and he knows what he needs to do, but it coming from somebody else is what gets him actually doing it. And that's how I am, like, where I know exactly what I need to do, but if I tell myself, I'm never going to believe it, or I'm never going to do it. So I, like, need someone else to tell me that thing. So I really like that.
I actually, like, growing up, I actually kind of did this myself, where, like, I would have I might have been drowning in certain, like, feelings, and I always had, like, a vision of, and this is cheesy, but the same thing, like, where you'll, like, talk to somebody that was, like, kind of you've had a connection with, and it was like somebody was stronger and you felt like they handled the situation always better, but they were vulnerable, and it was always like, this is what Jubilee used to do with, like, Wolverine in the comics. So I always imagine, like, Wolverine, like, what would Wolverine do if I'm having a conversation with Wolverine? Like, what would Logan do? And that was always my guy, like, as a teenager, be like, I want to know what his advice would be for me. So I kind of connected in that way to that. And it's interesting that you said you kind of need somebody else to tell you those things too. That'll be all right.
Yeah. Love that. But I think there's so many themes in this film, and I think all of those, what you just said, are absolutely true. But also I think it's a lot about the unit being stronger than the individual, like the group being better than the one person. The bit, one of my favorite scenes is when, yeah, he's talking, Cantona and Eric, the postman, are having a chat as Eric's delivering the mail. And it's like what you said, Marcy, he's going over the thing, or who was it? It's one of you said about how, like, he can remember the different goals, and he's going over them. And he said, what was the standout moment for you? And so that was from a real conversation. That is really Eric Cantona's favorite moment when he played for Manchester United.
That's interesting.
Was the pass that he made. And so the idea that you win as a team, the team is more important. And then when we see later on a bit of a payoff with the gangster that you had talked about, Mikey, and how they try and get around that, they get around that by, they all, there's like a 3 busloads of football fans that turn up at this gangster's house wearing Cantona masks, because it's like that, we are together, we have solidarity, and we are supporting each other, and that is how we will survive. That is essentially the message that we're getting, right? And we see that line that really hits me in the heart, Mikey, just the same as it did with you. You think my friends are better than yours? And that is it. That, if you could sum this movie up, it's that. I think it's, you think my friends are better than yours? ? You know, rhetorical ? Because clearly he knows they're not. He's got some of the best friends in the world. And these are all people I know growing up. You know, I mean, that wasn't my part of Manchester, so I can't claim that. But I know these people. I know these Mancunians. I grew up around them. These people exist. They're real. And that attitude and how, you know, the way that they talk with each other, and the way that they, well, the way that they prioritize their football teams and different sorts of things. But to see their friendship and the importance of that friendship was part of the magic for me. And I think is not something that we don't always see in the north of England. That side, we're all a little bit grumpy. And all a little bit just like we prefer to be in a slightly sour mood than a good mood. So to see that positivity was such a welcome for me.
Yeah, what's funny too is like, I wanted to say, after you saying that the type of player Eric was, I found him really sweet almost to him, like not having the impression, like you could tell he was like a tough guy, but I wasn't really sure the type of player he was. And he kind of confirmed based on the poster says everything. I mean, we talked a little bit about this, but he has the poster that he looks at is really not like an action poster or anything. Nobody getting like dunked on, for whatever, lack of a better word, but it's just him staring kind of back into the camera and having like his chest out. And it has everything you could tell about the type of player he was. And he seemed like, you know, collars popped up in the air. He seemed like one of those guys, like the Roy Kent that we were talking about, the similarity. So like to have him give this kind of heartwarming, vulnerable advice to young Eric, I think was was pretty cool. And it seems like he's that type of person in real life where he's giving, like what you said, like he'd rather give to like the younger players.
That, and we talked about like giving a gift. Every game I wanted to give the fans a gift. And it's that relationship. So it's that kind of, like you were saying, Marcy, it's not like a superstar. He doesn't want to be a superstar, but he does want to be adored in his own special way.
I think there's a difference,
I think there's a difference too. What did you think about the emotional crux, apart from the fact that his stepson is in with the wrong crowd, is this relationship he walked away from 30 years ago and left his wife and their very young daughter for what transpires to be anxiety and mental health issues. But he never, as he says at one point, the problem wasn't walking away, which I did. The problem was I never found my way back. And so then 30 years down the line, how he then has to kind of, it's just like an agreement he has with his daughter that he'll look after his grandchild while she's studying. But part of that agreement means he has to see his ex-wife, and that's what triggers this spiral for him. And did that work for you? I don't know. How did you feel about that?
Can I talk about the first time I watched this? I assumed in the beginning that he had died in the car accident, and everything was like a fever dream right before he was dying, going on to the next the next world. Because it would go from like 0 to 100 in some scenes. And I was like, is this really happening? Or is this some kind of like acid fever dream? But I will say that I like that. I'm kind of happy that, I guess it doesn't really show. So Lily is his first ex-wife. I don't think they really do get back together, which is, I think good. Very good. But I do like that it's like you can have second chances with people. It doesn't mean you get back together. It just means like, hey, like we can be friends and we can have a good positive relationship with our daughter and we can have a good positive relationship with our granddaughter. Because how many families split up and that doesn't happen? You know, like my mom was a single mom. My parents weren't married, but my dad wasn't a part of my life, and it's not like he tried. At least, like, you know, he comes back and he tries. It might be 30 years later, but at least he's making an effort, you know. And I think, like, the important thing at the end of the day is your kids. It doesn't matter if they're 1 or 32, like, you have to be there for them. And like, there's going to be hard things, especially when you're a separated family. And what's important now is like making up for the lost time, being there for your child, being there for your granddaughter, and like just making a civil relationship work, and like finally telling that other person like this was what was really going on. It was never you, it was all this other stuff. And you know, because mental health is really hard to talk about. If you're not comfortable talking about it, you're not gonna be able to. It doesn't matter who it is you're trying to talk to about it. And so he was finally ready to tell her everything. And unfortunately, like, yeah, some bad things happened. And I wonder if, like, his second wife leaving him had something to do with that, too. Because he's in a similar situation where his, like, second wife just walks out and leaves his life, you know. So I like that. I like that they didn't get back together. Because I don't think it's all about romantic relationships. I think sometimes it's just, like, we can be friends and we can forgive each other. And we can move on from that, and we can have a good relationship for our daughter and our granddaughter. So I really like that part of it. So,
I think Ken Loach really works hard to avoid sentimentality and the smalts or the cheese and that sort of thing. And so I think you're right. It's a real reconciliation of like what would really happen in real life. And actually the best outcome probably was they could have a civil relationship. And I think the real victory is Eric, in a way, feels comfortable to be able to put his arm around her. In just a, you know, so there was a moment earlier on in the movie when Lily, the ex-wife, just puts a hand on his shoulder, and he flinches and he moves away, and he's not ready for intimacy. And she wasn't really offering intimacy in a sexual way. She was just kind of, it was just a friendly pat on the shoulder, but it was even that was too much. But at the end, when the daughter's graduating and they have their photos taken, he just puts his arm around her, and that's it. That's enough.
Yeah, I thought that was a really cute scene. I really liked that a lot. Yeah.
And I think that's as much as in real life as he could probably hope for, mm-hmm. really.
Yeah.
You know, and I think to the character's credit, he managed to maintain a relationship with his daughter, albeit out of the, I think, away from his wife. He never actually saw his ex-wife.
Yeah, I also like that there was a tie between Cantona and his daughter as well, too, because his wife was like, oh, you were just always having fun taking her to go see Cantona and stuff. So I think that's mm-hmm. why another reason why he has good memories tied with his daughter with going to watch him play. So I think that's another whole other level of why this guy is so important to him, too. So
did it work for you, Mikey?
Yeah, I like the how the information was kind of given to us, because it wasn't hitting you over the head what his situation was, who even the boys were in the house, why he's not with the mother of his daughter. And I just like how it kind of was like, you know, you come to learn it. Even like the flashback scenes were pretty cool. And I did realize like the crux of the movie, the climax was trying to figure out what happens is the son, he's wrapped up in with the gang and he has to, they have to get rid of this gun that he shot somebody with. And ultimately they can't get rid of it. So they,
the gangster shot somebody with the gangster, the son didn't shoot
the son. Yeah. The son's holding it because this gangster can't hold on. He can't have a gun on him. So, you know, I found myself trying to figure out what will be the end of this movie. How is this supposed to play? What is the finale? And I love movies where I have no idea what's going to happen. And as soon as he consults Eric, he's like, do something like they don't see coming. And he says like, what is he afraid of? And even I'm like coming up with like an answer. And he says he's afraid of losing face. That's the thing he's afraid of the most. And when I see them on that bus and I realize that they're going to have a plan that's going to be this art. And I knew it wasn't going to be something where they go and beat the crap out of him or something like that. But like just that the friends had the solidarity to be there for him felt like such, that's like the fist pump moment where you want like, yeah, like friends coming together and saving the day. Mm-hmm. And like it was such a, like a good feeling of how they overcame this adversity that seemed like a completely hopeless. The whole movie just seemed like hopeless. And this man made mistakes. I've made mistakes. And like, so I know where it feels like I don't even know how to get out of this hole. And just to use Eric as like the symbol to climb yourself out and to make everything better from where you were at the beginning of the movie, I thought was great. It worked really well for me.
Well, you said that the whole movie is hopeless.
Mm.
It's, yeah, I think it sold a bit like a, we were saying this is Ken Loach's first comedy. Is it a comedy? Is it?
No.
It's. I said I listened to the commentary, and in it he said, comedy is just tragedy with a happy ending.
Hmm.
So I think that's his viewpoint. It's certainly not laugh out loud
all
the way through. It's whimsy at times, and then it goes off in a funny direction, a dark direction. With the gun plot and things with that nature, but it's very, I think it's very real in terms of like the acting is very real. It's not your polished actor. Mm-hmm. It's like perhaps how people might converse in real life. And I really think Lily, the ex-wife, she's so fragile and she's so yet so strong. But, you know, she's carved this life out for herself after her husband got up and walked out and gave no reason, never came back, and she was there with the kid, and she's got this life for her, and she, you know, she talks about going away and maybe taking a lover sometimes when she goes away, and yet there are moments when you can see that her heart is breaking. Like there's a scene when she walks into Eric's house and she sees on the mantelpiece he's actually framed this postcard that he ripped up earlier on, which she sent him after he left, and that was too much for her. And that got me that bit. I try to define the acting in this because it's not, I don't know, it's not what you would expect from movie acting. I don't know, does that make sense? It's not necessarily...
Yeah, you said, like, I know these people, like these Manchester people, and it's like they did feel like real people that live in the neighborhood or go to a postal worker, and it did feel very, what do they call it? Voyeuristic, where you're almost looking, the camera's there, but you don't even realize it because it's like you're just looking in at like a scene or something of a daily life of somebody.
Yeah, I think that's it.
My favorite parts of this movie is when Eric Cantona is on screen. So when he is not there, it is so missed. Like it's definitely something is missing, but I love the beginning when they first meet and he's like, well, we'll say something in French and prove it. And he's like, just be Eric Cantona. like if you were picturing this French guy, what would you have him say back to you? You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Ratatouille when Remy keeps seeing Chef Gusteau. Mm. He's like, I don't know. What would I say? I'm from your imagination. Like, so what would I know? Like, I don't know. So that's what it made me think of a little bit. And then I loved whenever they're in the kitchen and he's like, say no, no, no. And he's like, from your balls, no. And then say, he's, and then like, great. Whenever Jess, great. His one stepson comes down, he's like, dad, like, because it's just him in the kitchen by himself. And then I really loved, he's like, well, what did you do? Like, you know, after you quit and you retired and blah, blah. He's like, oh, I picked up the trumpet. And you're like, oh, he's going to be amazing because he's so great at football. So of course he's great at everything. And then he starts playing. But what I love is that Eric, the postman, is still just so much in awe that that's happening in front of him. And I think that's a really cute scene. And I think it's really cute that the song Manchester fans would sing for him was to the like rhythm of the French national anthem. Is that how it went? Because that's what the
I don't know.
That's what the subtitles said. So it was
Really?
How do you pronounce the French national anthem? Les Mar-
I don't know.
Oh, it's well, whatever.
Enfants de la Paris.
So that's how you guys would sing his like song.
Oh, geez.
To the beat of
that's
that.
That's a new one.
Yeah.
Marcy, you've opened my eyes. I don't know anything about that.
Look at this. What is happening? So I thought that was really cute, and I just really liked him a lot. I thought he was adorable. You know who he kind of reminded me of a little bit was the French dad in the beginning of Inglourious Basterds. Mm-hmm. He just looked like him. He had that big, thick accent, but he was just a big teddy bear at the end of the day, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We're not the first podcast to cover a film with Eric Cantona in out of our circle of podcasts. He was in a Spaghetti and Freddy episode very recently.
Whoa.
A movie called The Salvation with Ava Green and your man who plays Hannibal in the TV show.
Mads Mikkelsen?
Yeah.
Okay.
So him, Ava, and Eric Cantona are in this movie, and they loved this movie, so I want to watch it. I never even heard of it. It's a Western called The Salvation.
Oh, cool.
So he's continued. He's an actor. He's just released a new album, so I don't know. I can't speak to the quality of that. But what I can tell you, Marcy, is that if you go and search Eric Cantona on Spotify, you will find a version of the Beauty and the Beast song, Be a Guest.
Oh, my God. Is it all in French, though?
No, it's not all in French. It's in English, and he does. It's a kind of a duet with Jamie Cullen. You know Jamie Cullen?
No, I don't.
He's a jazz guy.
They should have just had him play Lumiere in the live-action movie and not Ewan McGregor. What are we doing here?
Oh, my gosh. Right.
What?
Well, there we go then. That was looking for Eric. I feel like this movie is like, if you were just watching it without context, without that, you would enjoy it, but you wouldn't love it. Whereas I think for the people who know Eric Cantona and perhaps know the sort of the area that is in the movie, it's so much more. And I think that's really like what we've been doing though on this podcast is sharing these little bits of ourselves that we can present to other people, right? And it's not like saying this movie is perfect. I'm not saying this movie is perfect. It's not. But what I'm saying is if you want a movie that perhaps shows a little bit of my soul, here it is.
I was going to say, it felt like you gave a piece of your heart this week. It really did. So I don't think you can say thank you enough for something like that, because that's why we did all this. This is why we started all of this. And like you said, like this was on the original document, the very old original document that's over 2 years old. And I think this was one of the first movies you added. And I think it was very important to you to share this. And I can't thank you enough for doing that and for providing the context, for adding a whole new light and layer to it. Because I know that Mikey is like me, where we're both like, what? What is happening? It's special because of you. I hope you know that. This movie is special because of you.
Mm. Well, thank you, Marcy. Mm-hmm. Now it's special because of all of us. All of us.
We're all going to put on our Eric Cantona masks, get our baseball bats, and now it's special for all of us.
Spray paint somebody's wallpaper.
Yeah, Derek, we were...
When he was yelling, when he sprayed his coat, going, fucking no, I couldn't help but think of you.
I mean, if you counted the amount of times somebody said fuck in this movie, or if you did the Thunderstruck drinking game to this, but replace it with fuck, Martin, I don't know if you'd win or lose. I'm not sure.
Well, I do.
Sorry, Mikey, what were you going to say?
I do like how Dirk said that he wrote to the both of us. He said, I would suggest subtitles for this movie. And I was like, way ahead of you. Like, as soon as the movie started, I'm like, I'm definitely going to have to put on subtitles. I don't know what it is.
Did you have to, like, did you get whiplash from reading that message? You're like, is he really suggesting subtitles? Mr. Anti-Subtitles is suggesting subtitles? Wow. Yeah. Or is a little pig flying by my window? I'm not sure. Well, let me check.
Marcy.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I'm growing as a person because of you.
Okay.
Maybe you are my Eric Cantona.
You're welcome.
There we go.
That was great.
Looking for Eric.
We all learned something.
But now is the part of the show where we morph from a movie mixtape into a music mixtape. And we pick songs that we think connect to this film, or when we were watching this film popped in our heads, or we quickly Googled French football songs and saw what came up, and now we share them with each other. And if you're so inclined, you can click in our show notes and see the Spotify playlist for all the previous songs from the previous episodes, which I think we started. Did we start with The Love Witch? Was that the very first one?
It was
one?
The Love Witch. That's when we got Ron's email, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so musical director Ron suggested this idea, and it's a winner. You know what? It's a winner. Mikey, do you want to go first?
Sure. And I went back to The Well, my favorite band.
Wu-Tang Clan.
Not that well.
Metallica.
And there's a song called Hero of the Day, where you're searching for the hero of the day, and it's more vulnerable. There are threads out there. Everybody looking for the hero of the day, which Eric was looking for, and his son was looking for. And when I first heard the song, the favorite lines were, excuse me while I tend to how I feel. These things return to me that still feel real. Also, there's a common lyric about mama, they try and break me, which is maternal. Like I think it's about war and like soldiers and stuff like that, but seeking out like your father or somebody else to help you with in these times of despair. And I think for those reasons, that's my song for this movie.
We're all being a bit, that's a really, I love the link you're getting with the lyrics there. Mm-hmm. If only Marcy linked songs with lyrics, and then, you know, we'd all be better off.
With me.
Oh, I suck when Marcy, I do that, Marcy? I suck when I do that, is that what you're saying? Oh, wow, it just came out.
Don't, listen, keep your potty mouths out of this bit, okay? Marcy Dale, yes. What you got playing with your hair?
So, I was struggling thinking of a song. This song I wanted to save for another movie I have in mind for down the road. We'll see if it ever happens, though. But I was really thinking about Eric and Lily and just how sometimes we push people away and we don't mean to, but for our own personal reasons. So I picked Fallen Water by Maggie Rogers, my lady.
Your girl.
And the chorus goes, I never loved you fully in the way I could. I fought the current running just the way you would. And now I'm in the creek and it's getting harder. I'm like falling water. So it just made me think of Eric and Lily. So that's why I went with that. I never loved. Song, so you should just put the whole song in, so thank you.
Right, well, I've gone for, well, my pick now, isn't it? You two, mm-hmm. Great picks. I think it was a hard film to pick a song for. I don't know why, but I struggled with this. I did. I was trying to think of something a bit like Mikey came up with, like a hero worship type of thing, but I couldn't find one that really I was happy with, that I liked. I think I found a good one because I've gone for a song that sums up the relationship between Little Eric and Big Eric. And it is Don't Give Up by Peter Gabriel with Kate Bush, who does some vocals in that. And Kate Bush almost plays the role of Eric Cantona in this movie. So Peter Gabriel's verses are about how, you know, he's tired and he's got nothing left to give. And then in comes beautiful Kate Bush and she says, don't give up because you have friends. Don't give up. You're not beaten yet. Don't give up. I know you can make it good.
No fight left, or so it seems. I am a man whose dreams have all deserted. I've changed my face, I've changed my name, but no one wants you when you lose.
Don't give up, 'cause you have friends.
And I just thought, that's it. That's Big Eric. That's Little Eric in a nutshell.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Can't wait to listen to that. That's
and
good.
If people don't mm-hmm. vote for you this week, then they didn't really mm-hmm. listen to the episode.
Well, there we go. We love sharing music mm-hmm. as well as sharing movies. So please, look, if you have songs that you connect with any of the films we've talked about, just let us know. You can connect with us in a couple of different places. Over on the Instagram, on the gram, on the IG, our address is the_movie_mixtape. And that is the place where we plonk a load of amazing Mikey Plunk. PR, amazing Mikey PR. Just like, Plunk. you want to know where we plonk the good Plunk. Art? It's on the Instagram. Mikey shared with us his art for this episode, and it's absolutely spectacular.
Oh, yeah, I did love if that, you... Mikey. Sorry, I didn't give an emoji to it. Yeah.
If you want to know if someone can capture the elegance of Eric Bishop's hair in art form, yes, he has done. He has done. So you better look forward to that. But also on the Instagram, we have stories each weekend, usually about, like, who's the best song pick? I don't often win, but don't feel sorry for me or anything. And then we might do some questions about upcoming movies. So the_movie_mixtape, check us out there. If you click the show notes, actually, I don't normally say this, but if you click the show notes, you'll find each of our links on Letterboxd as well, if you want to connect with us on Letterboxd. But if you want to email us, and why wouldn't you, because we're all really nice and friendly, you can type your message and send it to themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com. No official emails this week, but want to shout out a couple of different things. First of all, just a big cuddle to our friend Brandon.
Oh yeah.
Who Brandon was the only person that I follow on Letterboxd who logged this movie, and he'd given it 4 stars. And we had a little chat about it today over in another podcast Discord, and we shared our love for Eric Cantona. And he showed me the Eric Cantona biography that he had, and I showed him the Eric Cantona biography that I had, and we traded a few stories, and I really enjoyed that little chat. So thank you, Brandon. I love you. Thank you. And then the other interaction we had was with our boy Ron, co-host of the Real Latinos, singular host of the Needle Drop podcast, musical director of the Movie Mixtape. He watched this movie for us. I'm just trying to pull up his Letterboxd review now.
Well, I have it here, and I actually wanted to talk about this scene.
Will you do it, Mike?
There's a scene in the bar where I guess the friends were getting into it with... I kind of was lost. It seemed like a very local thing, but they were giving each other a gruff with another group of friends, and he...
Do you want me to explain it?
Yeah.
So it's the people who got sick of... the corporate nature of Manchester United, the brand nature.
Got it.
And they decided they were going to switch their allegiance to, they were going to make their own club, FC United. And that was, that's it. They're a very small team. You know, FC United are not in any big league at all. They're just you go and you watch a team play football and you get behind them. So that's what that conversation was about.
Got it. And that came across. That was actually a funny scene. That was really good. But that's
oh, did I derail you?
No.
Did I derail you?
No. I was just going to say, because Ron led off his review with a quote from that scene. Where he goes, you can change.
Read it for us, Mikey.
You can change your wife. No, it'd be better British. Go. It'd be better British. You have to do.
Oh, Jesus.
You change your wife.
Oh, here you go. No, hold
not
on.
Australian, Marcy.
Sorry.
Yeah, so Ron, God bless him, did watch this film. And this is his Letterboxd review, 3.5 stars. And he starts with a quote from the movie. You can change your wife, change your politics, change your religion, but you never, never can you change your favorite football team.
Mm-hmm.
But Ron also sent us a little question that he wanted us to answer live on the air. It is, I would like to know who each of your personal, professional, athlete, sage apparitions would be. And then we all gave it a little heart emoji after that. Marcy, I think you had an answer straight away, right?
Yeah, so this is one of those things. If you think too long about it, this could go on forever. So just rip that Band-Aid off. Who do you want to, like, think of? First and foremost, like, who comes to your head, like, right off the bat? So for me, it was Pascal Dupuis. And he is a French-Canadian hockey player. And he played for 3 different teams in the NHL, but he came to the Pittsburgh Penguins in 2009. We won a Stanley Cup in 2009. And I wouldn't say he was like we have Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and Chris Letang on our team. He's not like the most popular dude, but just he was that guy. He was that guy just there to get the assist. He was that guy that was like the moral support. Oh my God, he used to do these interviews with one of our local broadcasters. His name's Dan Potash, and he'd always be like, thanks, Dan. And he'd be so freaking funny. And he was just a very, very handsome, funny man. I have met him. He just kind of was like that guy that you needed the glue on the team, if that makes sense. So in 2015, he started getting blood clots in his leg, and he had to retire. And I'm going to get so sad. And so he had to retire. But then we won the Stanley Cup that year, and they let him come out on the ice in his whole uniform, and it was so cool. And so he's actually, I love him so much. But I've met him before. I used to work where the Penguins practice, and he was like the most down-to-earth guy. And that's why I love hockey players, because he was so freaking funny. He actually used to play soccer, and I used to go and catch the ball for him all the time. He'd be like, girl, the front desk, go get that ball. And I'd go and get it. But he just always said hi to me every morning. He was just a really nice guy. So sad when that happened to him, because he had to like end his career early. And I'm getting emotional because I just love this guy so much. But miss him all the time.
Little did he know, Marcy, he may have ended his NHL career, but he's just about to become your sage apparition.
Looking for Pascal. Did he ever drop?
That is a good pick.
Yeah, but did he ever drop kick what? Somebody in the front row? That's what I want to know.
I mean, not on an ice skate.
No, with his skate. I thought you were going to say, Mikey, did he ever drop his pants at the front desk? It's like, what a crazy turn this has taken.
Oh, my God.
Who have you got, Mikey? What's your answer to this question?
Yeah, Ron, such a great question. And I think we want to say his answer was Andre the Giant, which I thought was interesting, too, and fascinating.
Laughed at anybody want a peanut.
No, it's good, because it's not laughable. That's a great line. That's a great line.
Do you know what I was doing, Marcy, right? I was trying to stay out of the conversation because I didn't want to engage with it too much, because I wanted to have it live in front of the millions and millions of listeners. But you were just like, look at all these hockey players here, telling us all what your answer was. It's not like it wasn't a Ken Loach film at all. It was the exact opposite. And you knew totally what was going to come.
I just, nobody commented on my Princess Bride gift, and I was super pissed off about it.
I thought you were making fun of Andre, that's why.
No, I didn't like it. I love his performance in that movie.
It took me like about 20 seconds. I was looking at it going, what the fuck is she talking about?
He put a spoiler on Andre the Giant, so I was like, what is a way of, if you know, you know.
Oh, I get you.
But not flat up being like, Andre the Giant, so anybody want a peanut? That's like one of my favorite lines in Princess Bride.
I get you now. You're very smart, Marcy. Too smart for me.
And you know, between Andre and Pascal Dupuis, I think.
Dupuis
and Eric Cantona, I feel like I should take a French athlete, but I can't.
Bon.
I said in the beginning of the show episode, all my childhood heroes would be Dwight Gooden or Daryl Strawberry or Lawrence Taylor.
Daryl Strawberry, holy shit.
Or a wrestler, they all became like washed up and they all ended up doing drugs. They they probably could appear and give good advice because it'd be like, don't do this. But the one thing I will say that came to mind that always kind of comes to mind in hard situations is weird because I grew up a Knicks fan and it was hard to root for this fan. But I love the playoffs because the Knicks would be eliminated pretty early and I could watch this man enjoy the greatest basketball player that ever lived, which is Michael Jordan. And it wasn't so much what he did, which always was amazing. And he transcended the game of basketball around the same time that Eric, I guess, was playing too. But I guess I play basketball and like maybe to be that height or working that hard, maybe you could do some of those things. The thing that I always just was like incredible to me was that I was so super anxious and so super emotional and just watching the games, I'd be filled with anxiety and just nerves. I couldn't even move in my seat. And this man would just, there is literal ice water in his veins. He would do things like knowing the ball's coming to him, the game's on the line time after time, and he would win it. And like, it was no problem. And it was just, I think in the situation, let's say if I find myself like young Eric here, I would want Michael Jordan up here and being like, this is what we're doing. And it being like, knowing everything's going to be all right. So that was my
answer. We're going to go fight the monsters. I need you on my Looney Tunes.
Yeah, right. Not the greatest actor. Let me tell you, he's not a good actor, but.
I love the way you keep calling him young Eric when we've said he's maybe early 50s, but looks like he's in his 60s.
I like that. Yeah.
But I'm connecting with what you say, Mikey, because it's hard, right, to think of. Mm-hmm. I think it's hard to think of a sports person who probably hasn't let you down since they've retired. And I think my honest answer would be Eric Cantona. Mm. And that's the problem I've been having. It's like, who actually would I pick? And you know, I'm a big wrestling fan and Ron picked Andre the Giant and I was thinking about wrestlers, but you definitely can't pick some of the wrestlers that I used to love as a kid for various different reasons. Having it as a given that the real answer is Eric Cantona. My other answer is a current football player for Manchester United. She's the goalkeeper for Manchester United. She's called Mary Earps and her nickname is Sweary Earps, because every time the camera flicks back to her, she is fucking and fuck off, you fucking twat. And there's a very memorable moment recently when she was playing for England and she saved a penalty and the camera just went dead hard into her as she screamed out loud. And I think if you've got a sage apparition, it's not just because you enjoy the amount that they swear, right? They've got to be something else. She's the pinnacle of her sport. She was just voted the best player in England, but also she absolutely took the sponsors to task recently when England, we call them the Lionesses over here, the English football team. When the Lionesses were going to a tournament, they'd reached like the final. No, they've won the previous tournament, sorry. And they were going to the World Cup. And Mary Earps is this big player. And the kit manufacturers refused to sell a goalkeeper top because they said nobody would want to buy it. And she fucking kicked off about that big time. And she created this whole kind of hullabaloo on social media and eventually forced these football kits to be released. And I think she stands up for what she believes in. She's a bloody good player and she swears nonstop.
My hero.
So that's exactly what I want out of a sage apparition. So there you go, Ron.
It's awesome.
Thank
man,
you, Ron.
I feel so dumb that I don't, of all the football I don't know, it's the biggest sport in the world and I don't know anybody. It's pretty great.
Well, don't worry about it, Mikey. You're educated now. Mm-hmm. I can't wait, Mikey, to find out what sport we cover next because hold on a second. Mm. It's your pick next. So why don't you just tell us right now?
We're going to travel back to a time, a renaissance.
Oh, my goodness.
Culturally.
Renaissance.
In sports. Do a movie about...
Jousting?
Brothers.
I thought it was good. Did you think it was going to be
what?
Heath Ledger?
I did. so excited.
I thought that's where you were going with that. Sorry, Mikey.
Okay.
Marcy derailed me.
I thought you were going to pick...
You said the Renaissance.
So
we all thought... A Knight's Tale with Heath Ledger.
I said a Renaissance in sports. In this sport.
Oh.
And in culture.
Yeah, okay.
We're going to... I think this movie came out in 92 or 93.
White Man Can't Jump.
White Men Can Jump.
Look at me. I've never seen this movie, but I need 1992. Okay, sorry.
Marcy stepped all over my intro. Marcy stepped all over my answer.
It's not like
Imagine being on a podcast, Mikey, with someone who steals your thunder.
Just record it now, like Marcy. Just record it. Why don't you do the summary next week, Marcy?
So there's two guys, Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson. Rosie Perez shows up at some point. I don't know when, but I've never seen this movie.
Oh, wow. That's
I've never seen this movie, but I know who's in it.
Fantastic pick, Mikey.
Yeah,
fantastic.
I'm so excited. Mm-hmm.
Can I tell you something else? I've never seen it all the way through in one go, I think. Cool. I think it was one of my brother's favorite films, and he would sort of have it on. So I don't think I've ever sat down and watched it.
They remade it, Mikey?
I thought it was I thought I saw something on a TV show.
It might have been a TV show, maybe. It's on Hulu, but you don't have to waste your time. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, but Marcy, fuck that. We're covering the film, right? We're covering the film.
I just had a genuine question.
In our next episode, and it is Woody Harrelson.
What?
Wesley Snipes. White Men Cannot, for the love of God, jump. Okay, so click on your pod boxes next time and join us for that. I love you all. We will see you later.
Au revoir. Au revoir.
Mama. Au revoir.
Really suck on that, Lee suckers.
Very good.
Presented by Dirk, Marcy and Mikey P. All episodes are edited by Marcy and Dirk. Show art by Mikey P. Our logo comes from Iron Tooth Design. Follow us over on Instagram at @the_movie_mixtape. Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got.
I really thought you were picking A Knight's Tale, and I was
taking
like...
Taking a break from all your worries.
Sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away?
Who is Sam and who is Diane?
Sometimes you wanna go where everybody knows your name.
Okay, wait, you wanna go where people know.
You wanna go where everybody knows your name.